Blog Talk Radio.
This is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
I'm coming to you live from the suburbs of Philadelphia. It's the Tornado Tony Pennycamp.
Otherwise known as Psychic Tony.
That's right. Don't forget it either.
Right. Well, I'm sure Tom's going to be popping in any second as well. We have a lot of show to cover tonight. The makeup interview with Glenn Johnson. Phenomenal boxer, and was in a range of different weight classes up there. And recently, he was probably best known for his participation in the Super Six tournament.
Yes. The guy's fought a huge hit over the world of boxing over the last two decades. I mean, we're lucky with the guy that, you know, he fought Bernard Hopkins, he fought Roy Jones, knocked Roy Jones out cold. Major upset. You know, he fought Antonio Tarver, Chad Dawson, Carl Proch, you know, Andre Ward. I mean, you're talking about, you name him, he's fought him. And he's a guy that, you know, basically the one thing, and my dad always says that he liked about Glenn Johnson, it's like, when and where and what weight? I don't care who I'm fighting, you just tell me when to be there, where I got to be, and what weight I got to be at. And often fought so much on the road. You know, that's why I call the road warrior. And, the guy's been screwed over so many times in his career. And I know what that feels like on a much smaller level. And it can really discourage you. And, you know, he always just came back and, you know, stronger and, you know, persevered. And, I mean, it took him, you know, after that loss to Hopkins when he was undefeated, his only stop is loss. It took him a while to get back in the, the world title picture. And then when he finally did, you know, he was, you know, taking fights on the road. And, I mean, he finally broke through in 2004 when he got that opportunity with Roy Jones.
Well, very aptly put there. And there's Psychic Tom. Can you hear me, Psychic Tom?
I'm here. Good evening,
all
guys.
Right.
Good evening.
Are you ready to win back your psychic label this week?
I'm going to try. I think my crystal ball is glowing. Okay, so.
Did you predict that Ricardo Mayorga's MMA victory would be overturned? It happened.
Wow. No, I had not heard about that. Oh, my. Well, that'll be an interesting story, huh?
Of course, he weighed in at 175.9 pounds for what was supposed to be a lightweight bout.
Wow.
His opponent was 153 pounds. But so it's about 10 minutes by.
In the boxing, he was 147.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, here's this. It's been changed to a no contest now. The Nicaraguan Commission, even though it's probably the same commission that allowed the fight to happen in the first place with the weight difference.
Yeah, I guess that's the big question. I mean, how did this thing even kick off to begin with? Well, like you said, maybe it's a different commission down there.
They've also suspended my Mayorga for 3 months. So, welcome to MMA. Big story in MMA this week is Nick Diaz is starting his own promotion, War. That's what he's calling it, War Mixed Martial Arts. And he's putting in all the paperwork and, you know, apparently going forward with it. So he's going to be the next Dana White. He's got the mouth for it, we know that. Does he have the money? We don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, but it's all over the airways this week.
I wonder what kind of drug testing they're going to have in that organization.
It'll be the first organization where it's mandatory to be a card carrying.
Yeah.
A couple other interesting stories to get to at some point. We got, of course, UFC on FX6 to talk about. That's a big one. Yes, we got some bad news for the Floyd Mayweather undercard. Leon Love got bagged in the post-fight piss test, I guess, for a diuretic. So, I guess Floyd Mayweather's camp is not very happy with him. They're trying to represent themselves as a drug-free camp.
And I actually even saw some Facebook posts from his opponent, Gabe Rosado, you know, discussing that. And then a few of other Philadelphia guys, you know, that were supporting Dave, you know, just saying how, you know, it's like, of course, a lot of people don't think Love won that fight. I mean, he climbed up to Canvas, especially the second half of the fight, he got beat out pretty good. And then it looked, and what really makes it really look bad is he's a Mayweather guy. And you get a guy like Floyd who's been, you know, when he was trying to get the fight with Pacquiao, you know, was fighting so hard for, like, the blood testing and the Olympic testing and advanced drug testing. And then a guy in his stable fails a test like that for, you know, a banned substance. Definitely not good. It does not reflect well on team money.
Yeah, and apparently he has some major weight issues. Not a kind of excuse, but I guess an explanation about why he could have tested positive for that. And the diuretic was called hydrochlorothiazide. And another fighter on the car tested positive for another type of diuretic as well. But didn't have the kind of record Love has here. Undefeated with 8 KOs going into the fight there. But he was 2 hours late for the weigh-in and then was 161.5 pounds on his first attempt to make weight. And then he returned to the scale nearly an hour later, almost maxing out the time allotted to make weight. Only then was he 160 pounds. So, that's an interesting part of the story. But, both fighters who tested positive for their diuretics there on that card will temporarily be suspended and eventually face before the commission, perhaps as soon as the mid-June meeting. And they're probably going to face a suspension and a fine. If Love's positive test is upheld, the result of the fight will be changed to a no decision. But the undercard fight for the other guy, I guess, is going to stand because he lost.
Yeah.
That's a funny rule. He lost, so everyone stands. The usual suspension for a diuretic is 7 to 8 months, but the commission can go up to a year depending on the circumstances.
What did Vargas get, Fernando Vargas get busted on a couple of years ago? It was, I forget if it was like a steroid or, I don't think it was a diuretic. I think it was like a type of a performance-enhancing steroid. And they took him out for at least a year. I think it was a 12-month suspension.
A boxer can also be fined for this up to 100% of his purse. Typically, though, it's a 30% fine. And Love made $100,000 for this fight, while the undercard guy Garrettson earned $3,000. I was taking a bigger hit to be Love, so I would think no Love for Love. Anyway, from that to some good news for boxing. I did not know, we saw Tony Monk Foreman at the Rocky Marciano dedication. The statue. You saw him, right?
You were breaking up a little bit again. You didn't know what about the Marciano dedication?
The Marciano dedication, the Rocky Marciano statue. There was a guy named Monk Foreman. Foreman the Third.
we both saw him when we were walking out. He was talking to him, and I said, I said, oh, there's Foreman's son. And I said, they even announced him, George Foreman, the monk. And shit, I remember when George was fighting back in, like, the early 90s, and he was talking about, you know, all of his Georges. And I remember the one George was called Monk, and he had a picture of him where he was holding him or something. And you see this adorable little blue, and now he's like 6'3", and like 220 pounds, and he's a dead ringer for his father at that age, except for the Afro. And, I remember he was talking to two or three people, and that's why we didn't go over.
Well, he has been fixture in the Boston area lately, I guess, and now he's about to open a boxing-themed fitness facility, they're calling it, at Midway Studio in South Boston's Fort Point neighborhood. And he says it's going to be home to the ultimate boxing workout and luxury lifestyle of boxing champions. And he's 30 years old. 16-0 as a pro heavyweight, last December. And he's opening his own gym already. And directly from him says it will be the first gym to include what boxers experience at the beginning of their careers and also what they experience as champions. Think of the design as choosing the original gym where fictional boxer Rocky Balboa started training in the first Rocky movie. Urban ghetto meets luxury airplane hangar is how Foreman describes it. So he plans to open this in the fall. He's going to have boxing rings, classes with all kinds of different themes like boxing yoga. He's going to have a cafe in the store as well. Boxer needs to train for a fight, from fitness to nutrition to clothes. He's going to have the lifestyle component, which is going to be a difference between him and other gyms, he says. He says the club will not host boxing matches. He moved to Boston about a year ago. It's a month from to a boarding school. Southboro, I guess that's Massachusetts, but that was from ages 12 to 16. And he moved to Boston about a year ago with plans to open the facility, which he hopes to replicate in other cities. So maybe we'll get in touch with him and say, you're going to open the Philly branch.
And, hey, Rich, I hope you, and Tom, too, I hope you guys are sitting down for this. Are you ready for the big announcement?
What?
Lay it on us.
I, yesterday, approvingly recruited us as the MMA guest.
Really? You recruited us an MMA guest?
Possibly. This goes with my usual flair. You know, I don't do things the normal way. I never have. I probably never will. Being normal sucks. Yesterday around 9:30 in the morning, I decided to go to the Phillies game in the afternoon game. I said, I'm going to go. So I jump online and was able to get a ticket and a 2-hour open bar at their stadium bar. $40 with free food, so it was a good deal. So I go down there. But when I go down there in my outlandish outfit, I always go in because I'm a nice guy, and I talk to the men's room attendant at the McFadden's bar. Why? Because he's a nice guy. So I go in there, and every time he sees me, he calls me Uncle Sam. So I'm in there, and I'm talking to him, and I don't know how we got on the topic of combat sports. I was half-tuned by this time. And he comes, oh, really? He goes, my son is a professional MMA fighter. He just had his fight in the UFC, and he's getting ready for his second. I said, no shit. and he gave me his name, which of course right now I forget. And I, said to him, I said, listen, I don't have any cards on me, but told him to look up unlimitedfightnews.com, told him to look me up and get a hold of me, and if nothing else, I'm going to be back out of the game in 2 weeks. I could bring a card then. But his father, who's a good guy who I've known for a couple of years, said he'll talk to his son about being on our show.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Only me can I recruit a guest while at a baseball game in the men's room.
Yeah, and you somehow have no idea how you got on the topic of combat sports. That happens to me a lot, too.
Not at all.
Occupational
hazard.
Just innocent guys wanting to talk about something else, but my God, people just look at us and the conversation gets controlled. Yeah.
Tony, just in case there are any bookies listening, you have any predictions for this week's upcoming boxing events?
Well, let's take a look. I just pulled up BoxRec, and let's see. We got a big fight this weekend. Let me go to my BoxRec page. Oh, I was looking at next month. Oh, wrong day. Let's see. We're gonna look at 5/18, and let's see what we got here. How was it? Well, we got Shane Mosley fighting out in Mexico. I knew he was coming back. I just didn't know when. And apparently it's Saturday in Mexico, the Grand Oasis Resort in Cancun. He's fighting a gentleman by the name of Pablo Cesar Cano, who's 26-2 with 20 knockouts. His last fight was a split decision loss to Paulie Malignaggi, which a lot of people thought he beat Malignaggi. That was a world title fight there. I lost a split decision.
Auditioning for that fight they're trying to make between him and Malignaggi, maybe?
Yeah, I know they were talking about, Mosley and Malignaggi, but then, Malignaggi was blinded. I think the fight with Adrian Broner instead. And then it looks like Kino's other loss was a stoppage about a year and a half ago to Eric Morales. 10th round stoppage, and Morales by that time was, he still had a little bit of tread left on the tires. That was before his first title fight with Danny Garcia. But for the most part, Morales was pretty finished
by that time.
Sugar Shane Mosley, definite first ballot Hall of Famer, was the number one pound for pound fighter about 10, 11 years ago. But we're looking at a guy that has lost three of his last four fights, a wide decision loss to Floyd Mayweather Jr., where he only won one round. That's when he staggered Mayweather with the right hand. Then he had a very unimpressive draw with Sergio Mora, a very lackluster fight, wasn't entertaining, and it was a split draw. Then he lost every round in a dominating loss to Manny Pacquiao in 2011, just about 2 years ago. And then after that was another, dominating loss to Canelo Alvarez just about a year ago. So we're looking at a fighter here that's since 2010, he hasn't won a fight. But like I said, a definite Hall of Famer, first ballot Hall of Famer, was a well-respected world champion. He's 46-8, never been stopped, 39 knockouts to his ledger. But to be honest, there really isn't much left in the tank of, this once great fighter. I know we got another big fight that's going to be televised this weekend. I'm pulling that up as we speak. And here we go, in Atlantic City. And knowing me, you never know what I'm going to do. I might end up in Atlantic City this weekend. I'll go to the fights and I'll go to Bally's Wild Wild West with the dancing girls on the bar and the dancing midget cowboy. I could entertain myself that way. Couple world title fights. We got Devin Alexander the Great. I've never heard a person that puts their nickname at the end of their name, but whatever. Devin Alexander the Great, IBF welterweight title. He's defending it. He is 24-1, 13 knockouts. He's fighting a gentleman by the name Lee Purdy. Lee Purdy is 20 wins, 3 losses, and 1 draw. 13 knockouts. His last fight was just about 2 months ago, a stoppage win over Cosme Rivera, who is a well-respected titleist. Let's see, also on that card, the real main event, which should be a great fight, a boxer versus a slugger type of fight. We got Lamont Peterson, you know, very talented fighter, coming off that big win over Kendall Holt a few months ago. But he had been inactive since a win over Amir Khan in December of 2011. He was suspended for, failing a drug test. And let me see if exactly what it said. It doesn't say, but I know he was suspended. Came back and fought in the hole. Stopped holding 8 rounds. He's 31-1, 16 knockouts. His only loss was unanimous decision of Timothy Bradley. You know, and we all know Bradley's one hell of a fighter. He is stepping in there with Lucas Matisse. Lucas Matisse, a murderous puncher, Argentine fighter, 33-2, 31 knockouts. His only 2 losses have been split decisions, and both of them have been very disputed. A loss to Zab Judah, where he dropped Judah, and a lot of people thought he should have won that fight. Also, Devin Alexander had Alexander down, and a lot of people thought he should have won that fight.
For Tony Peterson,
could literally be 35-0. Good, talented fighter. This would be a good fight because Peterson is a hell of a fighter, and he's got a good chin. And Alexander's a hell of a puncher, so something's got to give. Also from the card, we have a former guest of ours, Sean Porter, who we talked to two or 3 years ago. 20-0, 14 knockouts, coming off a draw against Julio Diaz just a few months ago. That was on ESPN, I believe. He's fighting an undefeated fighter, so we got somebody's O's got to go. Phil LoGreco, 25-0, 14 knockouts. I don't really know much about him. I haven't seen him fight. But we're looking at some of the guys he fought. Frank Hung Tung Lang, who's a little past his prime. Took him the distance. It doesn't look like he fought the best competition out there. I mean, just as of, a year or two ago, you'd be fighting a guy 13-8, 8-16, 5-10. So when you're getting up into being 20-something and 0, you shouldn't be fighting guys that are 5-10. I'm not stopping them, going by the decision.
He had a guy who's 1-72.
Yes. His last fight, he fought a guy that was 11-7, and that was back in November in Boardwalk Hall. It was an 8-round fight. So you're talking about a guy that was 24-0 going into the fight is taking an 8-round fight against a guy 11-7-1. So here's a fight where, I think his record might be a little bit better than he might be. He's from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, with the name The Italian Sensation. Sean Porter, we've had the privilege of watching, we had the privilege of talking to. He's been in camp with, was he in camp with, Pacquiao a couple years ago was in Mayweather. I know he was in with one of them.
Pacquiao, I believe.
Yeah, you're right. Like, Thurman, Armstrong, and what it would have liked to spoil with a guy like Manny Pacquiao. Sorry, David Ortiz is in RBI. Single. The Red Sox, they're falling apart. I don't know what's going on, Tony.
Well, how do you think I feel? I was 1-0 going to baseball games, now I'm 1-4. And then today I had to go to the gym at 8-something this morning with a friend of mine, and I was hungover from yesterday's game with a 2-hour open bar. I was talking to the one girl that worked at the Valley Forge Casino where they had the fights at. I'm talking to her, and she's a drink server, and I'm trying to screw her a little bit. And I'm like, man, and she said, man, and she was, and I'm like, yeah, I feel like shit. I was smashed yesterday. Look, I'm sweating up pure alcohol right now. I'm probably like, my sweat was probably 90 proof.
Doubt it. We do have a big UFC fight this weekend as well. Obviously, we think we're going to get to that after we talk to you, but then it's going to take a while. Let's see what else we got here. Talked about Mayorga, Nick Diaz. The UFC, there's a big article this week about the UFC's contracts. Was on a Bleacher Report. The entire thing, but that detailed all the issues in the contracts, which has probably never been done before, but talk about some details. They control everything. Not the tattoos. And if you make a tattoos fighter who's getting there once they're under contract, it's pretty interesting. There's another article on Bleacher Report this week about what the UFC could learn from boxing. Believe it or not. As boxing still manages to make more money, according to this piece, anyway.
However, the same agreement outlined what would happen should he lose the belt. His
compensation would be governed by his original promotional agreement, which started at a pay of $7,000 to show and another $7,000. What's really interesting about this whole story is these relatively small numbers compared to boxing, I think, that are being thrown around by some of these guys. And Bellator is owned by Viacom. Blows my mind that they would, whatever this guy's dispute is over his contract, those are not big numbers for guys who fight for a living. For a promotion like Bellator, where they fight a lot, like they said, 6 times in 13 months. Pretty incredible. Anyway, we have to get Glenn Johnson on the phone. Schedule here.
Hello.
Hello, Glenn.
Hey, how are you, man?
Good to catch up with you. I'm not a telemarketer.
Huh?
I'm not a telemarketer. This is Rebel Rouser Bergeron.
I can't hear you. Say that again.
I said I'm not a telemarketer. This is Rebel Rouser Rich Bergeron. It's like News Unlimited.
Oh, nice to hear from you guys, man. What's going on?
So much. We also have our boxing expert. We call him the Boxing Rain Man sometimes because he knows so much. Tony Pacquiao. We got him on the line.
What's up, Glenn?
How are you, man? What's going on?
Not much. How are you tonight?
I'm good, man. You know, just driving in. Just picking my son from the gym and driving home right now.
All right.
Yeah.
And we also have Psychic Tom Padgett on the line. He's our third co-host here.
Good evening, Glenn.
How are you? Good evening, man. How is everything?
Okay, just doing great. Looking forward to talking to you.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Me as well.
Now, Glenn, can you just give us an idea how you first get into fighting?
I got into fighting because I first wanted to lose weight. I was overweight, 20-year-old, and looking for a gym to work out in. I happened to walk into a boxing gym. The Miami Police Athletic Program had a gym in my neighborhood, and walking there and asking some information, and they told me it was free. And if I live in the neighborhood and free fit into my budget, I jumped on the opportunity.
And what do you enjoy most about boxing,
the
sport?
Well, for me, I like the workout, and I like the challenge. You know, when I walk into the gym and, you know, started to train, it was so hard and you know, told me like it was impossible to do. And I see other guys were doing it, and I take on the challenge. I said, if they can do it, I can do it as well. So that was the first attraction. It was a challenge. And then after that, I see changes in my body. And I don't know if you've ever been a fat any person and start seeing, leave from having a soft body to having an athletic body. It's becoming a thing that you get attached to. And you know, I was excited about change in my body. And the trainer asked me if I wanted to try amateur boxing, and I said, if you think I could do it, I would. And he signed me up for the amateur program, and we start fighting. And I start winning. That was another excitement, another reason to keep doing it, because finally start doing something that I was winning. So I like that attention as well. So, you know, the moment I start getting compliments, I was hooked.
Yeah, at least I actually had at least one person when we asked what you love most about the sport, they said winning.
Well, you know, the a lot of people win a lot early, and you know, for me, it's not necessarily just the winning alone. You know, I win early as well, but
you know, I also faced some loss in my career too. So, you know, I have other challenges outside of just winning.
When I was talking to my dad was the guy that introduced me into boxing, and then I trained in Philadelphia. That's where I got my start. And I've been doing this. I've been involved in the sport for almost 20 years now. Enjoyed a lot. And when I told my dad that I was going to talk to you on our show tonight, you know, he wanted me to, you know, say a couple things to you. You were always one of his favorites, and he always enjoyed watching you, because basically, as he said to me, is Glenn is a guy that I could see back when I was a kid growing up, like when I was watching the fights in the 50s and the 60s, when you got guys, and there was, you know what, where, what, when, and what weight do I got to be at? You know, I'll fight anybody. You just tell me where I got to go, when I got to be there, and what weight I got to be at. And that's why, you know, and that also made me a fan, because even when I was an amateur, I was willing to take on anybody at any time. And,
you know, and
sometimes, hey, I've seen a lot of what happened in your career fighting in other guys' hometowns, gave you the name of the Road Warrior. And sometimes you'd go in there and you'd win a fight and come out on the losing end. And that can hurt, you know, not as much physically, but more spiritually than anything, because you put all that hard work in and, you know, you weren't reaping the benefit of it. And, I mean, if you would like to elaborate on that, you know, we'd love to hear it.
Oh, definitely. I mean, there's a lot of heartbreak, a lot of pain, a lot of emotional stuff that you go through. But, you know, it helped build me as well. You know, it also made me stronger, and it also prepared me for other parts in my life as well, for you know, when you go through disappointment. You know, we always try to attach things or experiences, and you know, you could always attach another emotion to another one, and that's just the way life is. Life is real. You know, life don't always happen for you the way you want it. A lot of us enjoy a good life, and most things happen the way we would like it. And for others, it's a struggle. And those struggles also build that person, who they are, build their character, build their strength, you know, the shoulders that they have to carry whatever weight life throw their way. So, you know, all of my career and, you know, all my personal life, all of these things build me into the person I am today. So, and I honestly feel I'm a good one. And, you know, I feel like I try hard every day to put the best me that I can put out there for people and for myself, because I feel like every day I step out there, I'm representing myself, and I want to make sure I do that in a positive way and try my best not to let anybody else that I run into change who I am and what I'm trying to represent and what I'm trying to put out there for other people to see. People might want to, you know, pick up something from it, or whatever reaction they might have, whatever positive vibe that, you know, people see me every day and they say, they give me a compliment saying there's something about me that they admire, or whatever, you know, my determination or the fact that I get knocked down so many times in boxing and I keep going, and at my age I'm still able to do what I'm doing. And all of these different things, you always get connected to somebody based on something. So, you know, those are the things that keep building me, and I keep getting stronger, and I think I'm physically strong and mentally strong just based on just the way how my career went. So it is what it is. You know, some guys go through their whole career and, you know, may face one or two losses, or some guys even go undefeated and stuff, but at the end of the day, my career is what it is, and, you know, I know that I fought hard and I went through my career the difficult way, the way how opponents, they try to make me into an opponent, and I turned that into a decent career. So I'm pretty proud of myself, and, you know, just show some people that might have the same struggles that I had, that, listen, you know, if you work hard, pay attention to detail, try to get better, and attack it and don't make excuses and don't feel sorry for yourself and cry and quit on yourself or any of those things. Those things might work out for you in the long run. And you know, that's what I represent, and I feel good about it.
I mean, I remember, like, you know, your career, because like I said, I followed boxing even long before I started it. So I remember watching you on, like, Tuesday night fights on USA. I remember watching you before, you know, you got your first title shot with Hopkins. So I was, you know, well knowledgeable of your career. But most people, you burst on the scene when you knocked out Roy Jones on the on HBO. So you want to elaborate on that a little bit?
I fight a strong Bernard Hopkins who, this man who's on the top of his game. He's still a master in the ring today at his age. And you know, then when I fought him, he was in his prime. So I still didn't really understand myself yet. I really didn't understand the boxing and at the level where I am right now. Or even where I was in 04 when I was at my peak, when I just primed and was able to understand what I wanted to do and how to go about it. So he really taught me a lesson. I mean, you know, he let me know what real boxing and the top level is about. And I went back to the gym and I started working a few things. I knew that my mental needed some adjustment. I needed to be stronger mentally. I knew I needed to be stronger physically. And I went through another tough fight again with a Marty Sosa, who is a physical guy. He's not a technical guy, but he's a real strong physical guy. And I lost a close fight to him. But that fight also helped build me again, make me stronger, and make me know that I needed to work on some more things. So all of those things lead it all up to the Roy Jones fight. At that time, by I get to the Roy Jones fight, I was already getting a good understanding of how I should be fighting. And that's why I had so much success against Roy Jones.
Who was the toughest guy you ever fought in your career?
Say that again, I didn't hear you.
The toughest guy you ever fought in your career?
Well, I have to say Bernard Hopkins. You know, Bernard Hopkins, I think, is the toughest fight that I had in my career because, again, at that time, it was just everything that he was doing was just new. It was new to me. I was never on that level ever before. So that's the most difficult fight. It's the only fight that I ever were in where I was at a loss. I didn't know exactly what I should be doing.
And how about, what was your best moment in the sport?
Say that again?
What was your best moment in the sport?
My best moment, I would say, for me, my best moment in the ring is when I won my world title against Clinton Woods in England. When you walk into a gym and you decided to be a boxer, we all want to become a world champion. And people might think, my best moment was when I beat Roy Jones. So that was just my recognized fight. That's the fight that I got recognition, from the boxing world is when I fought Roy Jones. But for me, the moment for me was when I won my world title, the IBF title in England against Clinton Woods. That was my defining moment. And then come back and defended against Roy Jones and was able to knock him out, was just still on the top.
The big question, I guess, since you just had a fight, is are you retired or not? What's going on?
I thought about retirement. I felt like I was going through some personal issues. I was not able to fight, and I kind of quit on my career and some stuff. And I felt like I was giving up on myself. I was doing some premature stuff. So I draw the brakes on that. I decided to step back in the ring and reestablish myself. So I'm in the process of doing that now, and I'm looking forward to come back and to do some things in boxing. So we see what happens, what the future holds. I know I'm not old for Ben Johnson, but I want to be the best 2013 and 14 and 15 moving forward. I tried to have a tough skin and go about, because I knew I needed that. I need to have that to have any success in this business. But you know, at the same time, we're all human, and we break sometimes. But you have to go back and rebuild and come back. So I'm in the rebuilding process now. I did some color commentary work, and now I'm doing some personal training with client professional athletes and also some private corporate people, and also I'm working with some fighters as well. So I'm doing a little bit of everything right now.
And you want to get into acting, I hear, right? You want to get up there in Hollywood and get in some big movies?
I'm actually talking to a producer about a movie right now as well. So, we see what happens, man. You know, I keep my door open, and when the opportunities come knocking in, I'm very happy that I built a decent reputation over my years, and people seem not to have a problem working with me, and I'm getting some opportunities. So, leaving my door open, and I'm looking into all of the stuff that I can do in the future.
Color commentary. You've done a little bit of that before already, haven't you?
I've done a few. I think I've done, I want to say about 9 or 10 of them. So I heard some good reports back. I mean, the people that heard them, the people who saw those fights and listened to my commentary, they were impressed, maybe some of them would just be nice as well. So I have to keep that in mind. So, you talk to people sometimes, you just want to be nice. But, I think I did a good job, though.
Well, if they said it was nice only after you gave them your autograph,
huh?
If they said it was nice only after you gave them your autograph,
You know how it is. Well, for me, I take everything with a grain of salt. I know, I don't really take anything too high, and I don't take anything too low. I try my best not to anyway.
Now, obviously, boxing has had some ups and downs. They call them black eyes for boxing, a lot of these bad decisions and stuff. What do you see as the big problems in boxing, and what would you do to fix them?
Oh, man. Boxing got, they have their issues. I think one of the biggest things we need to fix in boxing is judges. We need to get people to qualify the right way. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest black eye. I don't know what the solution is, how we fix that, but I know that's where we need to start. We need to, when people want two guys in the ring fighting and they see through their own eyes who win the fight, and they see the other guy's hand raised, it's just it makes things, people think there is something that's going on. There's sheiks and all kind of other stuff. People come up to me and ask me these questions. So we got to fix that. I think we need to start with that. And then there's other things that need fixing as well, but we have to work. I think we have to start the judges. And I don't know how we get, because you could see a fight and you know, they were showing the angles where some judges have angles where they don't can't see the punches landing if they find it turn a certain way. I know ESPN was showing that a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, maybe that's something that we need to look into and see if we could give the judges a monitor as well. And maybe, you know, so maybe they're able to see what's going on when the guy turn a certain way. They're able to go through something quickly before they put their decision on a paper. I don't know, you know. It's just, maybe we just need to look at how to do it differently so the judges can be a little more fair, and we have to hold them accountable as well.
Well, I know in a lot of states that don't have strong commissions, you oftentimes see very poor judging. I remember a fight a couple of years ago on ESPN. It was Emmanuel Augustus, and I apologize, I cannot remember the name of his opponent that night. But everybody, it was Courtney Burton, Emmanuel Augustus and Courtney Burton. And Burton was a Michigan guy. Augustus was a road warrior. He'd go anywhere and fight anybody at any time. You know, he didn't care. And everybody knew that Augustus won 8 of those 10 rounds relatively easily. And they announced it. It was, I believe, a majority decision. One judge had it a draw. The other two had it pretty convincingly for Burton. And the commissioner kept saying something like it was a split decision. And Teddy Atlas flipped out on him. In fact, Teddy was talking about it just a week ago on the show, about the time he flipped out on that guy. I know they tried to change with the open scoring, but a couple weeks ago they had the one fight on HBO or Showtime, and you saw the open scoring was more of a failure. Because a fight that was relatively close, the judges were all going for one fighter. So he knew in the late two rounds that he was up, like 98-92, no need to risk in the championship rounds. And he fought defensively. In a fight that if he didn't know, he would have thought, hey, I might be losing this fight. I got to close strong, and the fans would have got a better matchup out of it. I mean, I think there has to be a national commission, and I believe they have to have a strict, criteria for these judges. If a judge is repeatedly putting in bad scorecards, then he should not be awarded with more work. I was in a small fight card. In fact, they're going to fight a rematch next month in the suburbs of Philadelphia. It was a good fight. The one fighter, the hometown kid, and I've known him for 10 years. He's fought on ESPN, he's fought on HBO, he's fought on Showtime. You know, he's trying to rebuild his career off a loss. The fight was close. I mean, it was damn close. I mean, going into the last two rounds, I had it even. And he won the last two rounds, convincingly. Wins the fight by split decision. The one judge gave him every round. I said, there were a couple rounds where he got his butt whipped. He didn't win those rounds. It wasn't even close. And then when I was doing my report on that fight card, there was another fight earlier in the night that was a draw. It was a 4-round fight, and I thought the out-of-town kid won. I didn't think the hometown kid won. I thought he lost 3-1. And the 3 rounds he lost, I thought he lost pretty convincingly. The other guy dominated him. Sharper punches. He staggered him once or twice. He goes to the decision. The same judge that later in the night gave the hometown kid every round also gave the hometown kid every round, 40-36. I wrote in my report, and I'm an honest guy. You know, I know the hometown kid lost.
Right.
He said, this judge needs to have his credentials severely scrutinized because he did a poor job. It was like he went in and took naps during the round and just said, okay, I'm giving it to the hometown kid, you know, to make everybody happy. Well,
he's working for the promoter.
Yeah.
Working for the promoter. Right. I think that's something that should be changed as well, where these judges not supposed to be paid by the promoter. They need to be paid by the commission, and they need to have strict rules how they need, because you know you got these promoters, they take these judges on trips and vacations and stuff. Now how you going to have that kind of relationship with a promoter and now come and vote against his fighter? They want to end up doing favorites. So like you know these are things that's not supposed to happen.
It sounds like corrupt government.
Exactly.
Anyway, Tom, you got anything over there? You've been quiet.
Yeah, so, well, Glenn, I've been waiting a long time to congratulate you on such a long and outstanding career. And I know that I was covered earlier how you... I've been waiting a long time to congratulate you on such a long and outstanding career. And
thank you so much. I appreciate that.
And I know it was mentioned earlier about you being the consummate pro. You know, you'd always show up in shape. You'd fight anyone, anytime, anywhere. And I think that you really epitomized professionalism, because I think that you knew how to win and lose with class and dignity. And you can't say that about every fighter. And I really mean
you.
That. I really think the sport could use 1,000 more just like you. Now, my question is before the Roy Jones fight, I mean, I know that you've always had kind of a quiet confidence, but before that fight, you seemed like you were even a little more confident in yourself. Now, my question is, was it something that you had seen in Roy, or do you feel that you were just really at your peak at that point?
I felt I was at my peak, but I also felt I know how to beat Roy. You know, because I'm a big Roy Jones fan, and I studied him for a long time, and I would tell friends of mine that I would beat Roy, and they all laugh at me that I would get hurt, Roy would stop me, and whatever. And this was years before Roy and I was going to fight. So you know, but I just always felt like if you get up in Roy's face, which is my style naturally. I started out being a boxer, and then I changed my style to being a more aggressive fighter when I was going into hometowns, that you can't box in people's hometown and win. You have to go in there and try to get them out of there. So that's why I changed my style to become a little more aggressive and trying to get people out of the ring. So once I decided to do that, I realized that's a style that would give guys like Roy Jones and other fighters that have similar style some trouble. And by then, I started to have good understanding of how fights and boxing and style match up and all of those things. And you got to understand, early in my career, I didn't have these information, and it wasn't in my head. You know, you go out there and you kind of, you lock in some experience, but over time, you're starting to get these experiences, you're starting to feel a certain way, and you have that confidence because you now believe that you understand what you're doing so much more, so much better. So, you know, that was what was happening to me by the time when I got to the Roy Jones fight. And plus, I've already recognized it some years earlier that was my style, was the style that would beat the Roy Jones. So when I got the opportunity to fight Roy Jones, I said, I told myself, I said, you talk about this a lot, you got laughed at times, and now is your time to step to the plate and prove you can get it done. So I trained extremely hard, and this was my moment to prove myself, right? Not just to prove to fighters or other people or boxing fans or whatever, but also it was personal now, because I have to prove myself, right? Because I've been saying this for however long. Now you see your moment to get it done. So step to the plate and get it done.
Yeah, that old cliche, styles make fights, and I think it was a great matchup for you. And one other question, Glenn. At what point in your boxing career did you really start to believe that you were very gifted and had a good shot at becoming a world champ, or did you have that one particular moment?
Well, you know, as any fighter, when you're undefeated, you believe you're never going to be beat. That's just the truth. And And, you know, I got up to like 32-0 or something before I ran into a Bernard Hopkins. And up until Bernard Hopkins beat me, up until, you know, every round that I lost, I believe I was going to win the next round that was coming up. And I would lose that one, go back to my corner, and I would believe that, okay, this is the round I'm going to start winning. And until the fight over, you realize that, wow, this ain't going to happen, and you're going to get beat tonight. And, you know, I lose a lot of confidence in that fight, but I also learn a lot of experience as well. And then you go through the rebuilding process. And along with the rebuilding process is happening, you also have doubts there. But, you know, you have doubts that you never had before when you was undefeated. But then there is a process. And as that process happens, the experience comes. And all those experiences that happening is are giving you a new sense of confidence. And then this confidence now has become the better one, because you now gone through some things. And you know, it's funny, man. Life in all aspects is the same thing. It's like if you go through a relationship, when it's new one, it's more devastating than when the second one happened. And all of, you know, and all of that is all the same. It all tie into the same thing. And at least for me, it was. And, you know, I tied my experiences to life the same way, and it all feels the same way. And it is what it is. And as I confident grow, man, and things start changing and everything, you start feeling like, yeah, you know, I didn't think I was going to be a world champion because I lost my confidence. And then as the confidence come back, you say, yeah, I got it all back. I believe I'm going to still be a world champion. And you know, that was my experience, man, and it happened for me. So I'm very thankful. Glad I didn't let myself down. Glad I didn't quit at times when those things crossed my mind. I'm glad I stuck with it and did what I was supposed to do, and I got to where I went as far as it took me. So I'm a happy man.
Well, I believe in anything in life, there's no substitute for willpower and determination. And I think that's, you prove that by example.
Yeah, I think so too. And, you know, some people start out with a lot of skills and they've been groomed as a boxer or whatever profession you're in. You groomed from a young age and you have a lot of experience already when you get in, you know, you're in your 20s and stuff like that. When you start in something when you're in your 20s, you end up got to go through the same learning process that you would go through as a kid, and now you're doing this as a man. And so, you know, as you can see, I blossom later on in my life, in the 30s is where I blossom, because that 10 years that it would take a kid that's 10 years old and blossom when they're 20 and are, you know, when they're late in their teens and you know, in early 20s and stuff, it took me. I started when I was 20, so I still needed that 10 years of experience and all of that stuff. And so I started to blossom in my 30s, in my middle 30s and stuff like that. So it's a little bit of the same thing. I just started out learning on the job instead of going through the school as a young man, that process. So it is what it is. You just got to stick with it, especially if you have some skills you're working with and you know, at anything. I'm not just talking about boxing. I'm just talking about life itself, man. You just have a goal and you know, and a purpose and work hard for it.
And never give up.
And never give up. Exactly.
Now, guys, looking back on your career, is there anybody that you obviously mentioned Roy, you're a big fan of Roy's. Is there anybody in the boxing world you like to watch a lot of to try to pick stuff up from? You're trying to develop your style.
Well, I'm a huge Roy Jones fan. I'm a huge Holyfield fan. You know, I also watch Mike Tyson. You know, a lot of times, and you know, those were the time when I got into boxing. You know, those were the guys that was clicking. And, you know, I never watched boxing before I started boxing. And then I started watching old tapes with the Ali's and the Sugar Ray Leonard and, you know, Sugar Ray Robinson and stuff. And, you know, I went a bit into the thing and started looking at where it started and all the greats from before. But prior to that, you know, I would just pay attention to what was in front of me on TV. And those were things. So, you know, I became a huge fan of some of the greats, you know, Ali and Sugar Ray Robinson. And watch some of the Sugar Ray Leonard and those guys. So became a fan of them. You know, of that era, my favorite fighter was Aguilar. And of the Sugar Ray Leonard and the Thomas Hearns and the Duran and Aguilar. During that time, Aguilar was my guy. And, you know, after start watching fights with all of those guys, I said, yeah, I prefer Duran over all these guys. I mean, not Duran, Aguilar, I should say, over all everybody else.
And you got a picture of him on my wall right here, autographed from Goody Petronelli.
Yeah.
I trained at the same gym he did before they stopped using it. Brockton, yeah. And I have some connections to Massachusetts where I grew up. And, Goody Petronelli just died a couple years ago, but I was one of the last people to interview him. I used to be up at his gym every now and then when I was trying to do a comeback to the amateurs.
Right.
You know, just hearing the way he used to talk about him and seeing all the pictures on the wall is just incredible. He just came in there one day as a 16-year-old kid and wanted to learn how to box. And he was really cocky about it. He knew he had something right from the get-go. And so they threw him in there, and he kept coming back.
There's nothing like keep coming back.
Yeah.
That's where it starts. Keep coming back.
I guess now he's over in Italy. He lives over in Italy. You don't see him that much, but he has been in the news here and there. I've seen people getting interviews with him. So he's coming back for some big event this year, I think, in the next couple months. But, anyway, as far as outside of boxing, do you have any role models growing up that really helped you out a lot?
You know, I have a few people that I look up to, but you know, I really think my biggest role model, after I was 20 years old and I met my trainer, and I think he had the biggest impact on my life. You know, which, you know, Bobby Baker was the trainer that I run into when I was 20 years old, and you know, even though I think he had the biggest impact on me, he taught me so many things as a 20-year-old, as a hothead 20-year-old guy, that, you know, some of the people who I would look up to that was around my neighborhood was not people that I should be looking up to. So I finally met somebody that, you know, those are the people that I should be a role model. So I think he had the biggest impact on my life. And, you know, that's the man I look up to. And then after that, I established my own self, and you know, and I paid more attention to details and what my mom were doing and her own struggles and those things. You know, when you're young, you don't see those things as the way you're supposed to, but as you get older, you're starting to see those things. So you recognize that the respect and the love and the appreciation you should have for your mother. So. You know, but again, it started with my trainer. I think he gave me the things that I needed to have to go back and appreciate my mom the way how I should have. And I didn't do that earlier on than I should. So, again, so that's why I say it, my trainer, Bobby Baker.
What would you say is the most important thing that you do to get ready for a particular fight?
One of the most important things I do to get ready for a fight?
Yeah.
Two things I think is important. Two things. I think running is very important on sparring. Those are two things that, you know, you need those things to give you good performance. There's nothing gets you ready for a fight like proper sparring, because it emulates the fight and it's in actual, you go through the actual thing that you want to do in the fight, so that gets you prepared for it. So I think that's very important. And you got to establish the run to give you cardio You know, running not going to get you in shape, get you in fighting shape. I think sparring you. But it would, running will help you to get ready for the sparring, and therefore the sparring will get you over the top to where you need to be to perform as a fighter.
Yeah, I know that when I had my one main semester of amateur boxing, the running made all the difference for me because we used to actually run 7 miles every Tuesday. That stink on my cardio, that definitely helped me out that year. I came in for that semester pretty out of shape, and by the time I got done, I had a bronze medal. And I only about 5 total fights in the amateurs, but I got a collegiate bronze medal out of it. So that was, I could say running had a huge part to do in that whole deal. I did a lot of running in high school to get ready for that, for wrestling too. So
Definitely. And I didn't like running before boxing. I hated running. But then I realized it's something I was going to have to do. So once I realized it's something I'm going to have to do, I had to change my mindset and start liking it.
Yeah.
Force myself to like it.
We talked to one guy who used to run with Rocky Marciano, the former heavyweight champ there, that was also from the same hometown as Marvin Hagler there in Brockton, Massachusetts. And we talked to one of his best friends growing up, and he said that they used to run in just regular work shoes, and sometimes they would run from Boston to Providence.
Wow.
Brockton to Providence. 20 miles. Like, unbelievable.
Wow. Yeah, exactly.
And then they would get shot back. But that was his thing, too, road work. Always got to do road work. His wife even.
That reminded me of Jamaica when I was walking to school. I would walk some 10 miles, some 10, 12 miles to get to school as a kid.
My theory on road work was always this: when I go out getting ready to fight, like you, I hated it. I hated running. And thankfully for me, like where I went to school, we didn't have to run as a team. We only did it every so often because I was the slowest guy on the team, you know? I mean, I was a decent athlete, but I got shorter legs and I'm not fast. I never have been. I never will be. And I had guys on my team that were like, you know, long, spindly legs. One guy was a baseball player that could, you know, he could run like a deer for like 12 miles. You know, we had another kid that was a former track star. I can't keep up with them. You know, so I kept running, you know, with the group. But the coach knew that if he left me alone, I would do my road work. I was notorious for doing it. And then I would do, like, certain parts. I would run backwards. And then I'd do, you know, side to side to build up, you know, strength, you know, not just the calves, but, you know, the quads and all that. And my theory on it was, I hate doing this. And I always think, look where I'm going to fight. You know, I fought a guy named Michael Jordan, who Rich ended up fighting also. And I'm sitting there thinking, because of this guy, Michael Jordan, I got to run. And believe you me, I'm taking it out on him. Because of him, I got to run, and I'm going to beat his ass for it.
Yeah, exactly. That's the attitude to have.
Now, what's your ultimate goal in the sport now? If you're going to sticking with it for the long haul here, and if and when you do hang it up, what's your major plan of what to do?
I would love to get a rematch with Bernard Hopkins. I mean, you know, I told him myself, don't do to me what Roy Jones did to him. Where, you know, Roy Jones got the win and he stayed away from him and he ran away and he didn't give him the rematch for so many years to when the rematch was not even relevant anymore. So I said, you know, you step up and do the right thing, man. You know, we fought early in my career. We're a better fighter now. And, you know, he told me he would give me a rematch. But whenever time the topic come up, he never really step up to the plate. So now he's a champ. I think we should get that rematch done. I would love the opportunity to take his title, and you know, I'm hoping that would happen. So we'll see. You know, all I can do is my part. I can't do my part and his part. We'll see what happens. But yeah, that would be my goal.
All right, I'm telling them you said that.
Yeah, exactly. Now he knows. I tell him my. I told him a few times. You know, he knows. It's not. It's not something he and I have talked about face to face. He knows. He knows. So. Hopefully, some of the things he said to me, you know, he didn't mean it because he didn't turn out that way. But we'll see. You know, I continue to call him out and see if he step up.
All right. Yeah, it'll be a good fight. Gives you a chance to avenge the only time you ever been knocked out, right, in a fight.
Yeah, well, I wasn't knocked out. I was stopped on a cut. But, you know, every time, the only time I ever been stopped in my career.
That's important. That's a good one to avenge.
Exactly.
I pick something to do before I officially retire. That would be one of those things.
Yeah. You know, we'll see what happens, man. You know, hopefully, he's listening. When I see him again, I let him know that, you know, let's do this and see what he said. I know he probably, probably want to handpick his next opponent. But we'll see.
Yeah, that would be great. And once you're outside the sport, what do you want to do?
Well, you know, I'm already establishing some stuff that I want to do. You know, before I was doing the real estate stuff, the real estate market crash, but it's picking up again. So I'm going to start establishing that again, buy homes, remodel them, and put them back on the market and stuff like that. And so I want to get back into the real estate thing. I think that's what I'm going to start doing pretty soon.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that because you said you wanted to do some acting, and there's a guy who's an actor. He was in the movie about the bomb specialist in Iraq there. I forget what it was called. but that's what he does. He makes millions of dollars in the movies, but he also does that for income. He flips houses out there in Hollywood. He does all the work himself. Pretty big movie.
Yeah, you know, I that's what I was doing before. I mean, I was working in construction before when I was working my way up through the amateurs and through my early part of the up until I fought Ray Jones, I was still working construction. So. You know, even when I went to England and win my world title, and came back and went to work the next Monday morning, still, on the construction site, because I quit my job when I fought Bernard Hopkins, and I thought things was going to be different for me, and I had to go back to work because the payday didn't last too long. I decided that I was going to make that same mistake twice, so. You know, this time I decided that before I quit my job, I have to feel pretty secure. So I didn't quit my job until after the Ray Jones fight.
All right. It's always a good career to fall back.
Yeah. So now I want to go back into construction, but do it for myself.
Awesome.
Yes.
One of those things I'd love to be able to change about boxing is to, make sure there's a lot more fighters who have a plan after they get out of the fight game because, some of them, they don't know what to do, so they just keep fighting forever.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know.
They shouldn't. And they just, I think recently, within the last few months, came up with an idea to give certain boxers pensions. But it's like a once-in-a-lifetime thing. It's really hard. I think Iran Barkley was one of the first guys to get one. But, I'd like to see more of that type of stuff get done. And judging, of course, is huge. There was an ESPN fight. I know I probably should have mentioned this when we were talking about it, but there was an ESPN fight not too long ago, a few months ago, where the hometown kid I've seen fight out in Vegas a couple times. He was fighting in Florida, in his hometown. He wasn't from Florida, but that's where he was training. And I was just blown away because the punch stat numbers were totally in favor of the kid from overseas somewhere. I forget the guy's name, but he lost the fight. He won the fight as an underdog that wasn't from there. and the punch stat numbers were overwhelmingly in favor of this kid that ended up getting the loss. And I was at that time suggesting that the judges ought to get a look at those numbers before they make their number call between each round on who won the rounds, total punches. Yeah. Apparently, another promoter I told that idea to said that, well, you know, you can manipulate those punch stat numbers and they can be interpreted any way you want, so maybe they shouldn't have access to those numbers. But something's got to be done, whether it's training, different type of training environment that you have to go through before you're approved to, you know, be a judge. I don't know what they got to do, but it's
getting... Yeah, I mean, there's so much stuff that needs to be fixed in boxing, too, man. I mean, like, why we have evidence that there is a headbutt, a head clash happening, and there's a cut? We have evidence of it, but yet still we don't use that evidence. You know, the referee could make a bad call and say that cut come from a punch. But we have evidence. Every single person else in the world know that cut happened from a headbutt because the replay and all of these things that they can show where the cut happened. But yet still, we don't put that into play. We leave it and go with the bad decision that's made. And it's not the referee's fault why he called it the way he called it, because he's happening in real time, and we have the ability to go back and show it in slow mo and slow it down where you can actually see what happened and all of those things. But yes, we don't use that in every other sport. They use replays and all of these things to find out difficult calls and stuff like that. And we don't use those things. So, you know, there's just so much stuff that need to be corrected in boxing that just keep going on for years and years and years and years and just, you know, we're not doing anything about it. So, boxing definitely has some issues, and I think all the issues that we have is, yeah, I think we could correct them if we really wanted to. But, somebody just needs to, somebody has to step up and put in the work that's necessary and get it done. You know, just not just say, oh, well, you know what? The rich is getting richer through it and we control it. So we don't want to fix it. And whoever is, we're drinking their blood, just keep taking their blood. We don't care about those people. We just care about us who are on top right now. We're top and we're going to just keep staying on top. Until that mentality changes, then it's just going to be the way it is.
Yeah, it's such a well-known business for chewing people up and spitting them out, you know.
Exactly.
Because the fighter is seen as the most easy to manipulate in the whole scenario, and it's often the fighter who makes the least amount of money off of his whole career.
Yeah.
And doesn't even know half the numbers behind it. I mean, Rocky Marciano was a classic example. His promoter took 50% of his income, no matter what. Even if he was doing autograph signings, he had to give up 50% of his income to this promoter, his manager, just to get his shot. So I can't imagine it. What it's like, you know, to have to do almost all the work and then you're paying all these other people half the money.
Yeah, I mean it's difficult. I mean it's tough, but again, when you have nothing and this is your only way of getting something, it's an option, and you know, it's better going that way than not doing anything. So at the end of the day, they will always get victims because everybody trying to get out of a situation. My grandmother told me a long time ago that a drowning man will hold on to straw.
Yeah, that's a big one. That's a good one.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right. Anybody else have any questions? I feel like I'm hogging this one.
No, I don't. It was just a pleasure to talk to you, Glenn. One thing, I do have one more question. When you were, when you started your career out after the loss to Hopkins, and then you had that stretch where you were always on the road, and, really a lot of times you were in Germany fighting guys like Savan Aki and getting ripped off. And, you had a couple losses here, Sylvia Branca, Omar Sheikha, all close fights. Did you envision that, about a decade later, that would be a candidate for the Hall of Fame?
Oh, wow. You just gave me chills. I don't even know, man. You know, Hall of Fame was never something that I even thought about. And I've for the last 2 or 3 years, a lot of people have mentioned Hall of Fame to me, and I really don't know what to say when I hear it. I don't know how to respond to it when I hear it. So for me, I just want to say if I hit the Hall of Fame, that would be a blessing and an achievement that surpassed anything that I ever foresee at any point in my career. Up until people start mentioning it to me, I never have that feeling myself until it was start mentioning to me by writers, reporters, and you just said it to me now. And, you know, it has been happening to me for like the last 2 or 3 years. And again, you know, I appreciate it every time it mentioned, and if I ever get in, you know, that would be more than I set out to accomplish, and, you know, that would just be a moment I wouldn't know how to how to deal with that yet. So, but, yeah, I've never had that thought, man. So to answer the question that you asked would be a no.
All right, But it was great having you on tonight. Just, I followed your career, even before, you were fighting with Bernard Hopkins. And then, through the down times, even going over to England, fighting Clinton Woods, or fights with Tarver, Dawson, Spanotki. I mean, general who's who. I had to fight, and even as of recently, Tavares Cloud, which was a close, tough fight. Yusuf Mack, who I don't know personally, but I have friends that trained with him, and I know you knocked him out. But like so many just good names on your resume, and it was just a pleasure to get to talk to you tonight.
Oh, thank you, man. And same for me. Good conversation with you guys. It's nice to have that. Reach out and let some people know some of my point of view. So I thank you guys for the opportunity, and we'll see what happens in the future. You guys, all the best to you and your family, and we talk soon.
Thank you.
Hopefully one of these days we're going to see you in a major action movie or something, right? Next.
we will just hope. We keep our fingers crossed and keep those doors open. We see what happens. I hope that happens for me as well.
Awesome. And we'll put the word out to Bernard, even though you've already done it for us, but we'll put a little heat on for you.
Turn up the stove, man. Make it hot. Thank you, guys.
Too. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Okay. Bye. Good luck, Glenn.
Okay, so there you have it. That's Glenn Johnson. And I don't know, man. I'm telling you, that was a great guy to talk to about the sport of boxing in general. And I don't know if that will ever actually happen, Bernard Hopkins versus Glenn Johnson fight, but, man, they would not have a problem marketing that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you figure, and that's 16 years ago, I think the fight was. I was just looking it up. It was July 20th, 1997. And I remember watching it live. Being a Philadelphia guy, I remember watching Bernard also on USA's Tuesday Night Fights when he was fighting, not the main event, he was fighting like the opening fight of the card. Or if they would have like, say, an opening fight that ended in a couple rounds, he might be the fill-in fight before the main event. And I remember when Bernard stepped in and lost his first title shot to Roy Jones, and then he won it, and he was like Philadelphia's first world champion in like so many years. And, then I remember, I was watching, almost all of his early defenses. Even when I was in college, I had, Showtime and HBO in my room so I could watch all the primetime fights. And I remember I was home that summer watching, his fight with Glenn Johnson. I remember, he really outworked, Glenn.
Glenn was, you know, 35-0 going into that fight. But, like, and like he even admitted, this was a different caliber of experience. And he brought a lot of pressure to Bernard, and those are the guys that he fights best against. And I just kind of remember, like, almost after every round, the referee was going to the corner saying, you know, hey, you know, we're possibly going to stop this fight. And then in the 11th round, they finally did. You know, Glenn was, you know, lost every round. He was beat up pretty good. And then, you know, you get a lot of fighters, and when they lose their first fight like that, you never hear from them again. You know, you get a lot of fighters that are good. Okay, and sometimes maybe they came up easy, or they came up, you know, where they built up a record, and they had that first devastating loss, and you never hear from them again. Or with very, you know, mediocre results. That was Jerry Cooney. You know, built up media creation, had that big loss to Larry Holmes, and really he was done after that. And, you know, Glenn was a guy that he had. What I always think about with him is a couple of the words that come to my mind was obviously integrity. That's one word that comes to my mind. Another word is perseverance, determination, and just a mentally strong. Right. You know, he took a lot of disappointments in his career. Looking back over it on BoxRec now, you look at some of his early losses when he became the quote-unquote road warrior, he would go into another guy's hometown, and you look at, okay, it's a unanimous decision. But then you look at the scorecards. He fought Sven Aki over in Germany, and Aki was a fighter that you always hear me criticize because he got so many hometown decisions over there, and he was losing like 115, 113 on the cards. Well, if he was losing in Germany 115, 113 to Sven Aki, he probably won that fight. And he just kept persevering. You know, well, he got the title shot with Clinton Woods over in England, and it was a draw. Everybody knows he won that fight. And then he finally got the rematch, and he beat him. Then he got the fight with Roy Jones, and he was a big underdog, and he knocked him out. You know, here was a guy that, you know, could have been written off back in 1997, and here we are in 2013, still talking about him as a possible Hall of Famer.
And it's pretty much helps end the drought for boxing guests that we've had for a while. We do have one big MMA fight to talk about, fight card here. We got UFC on FX8. Big main event is Vitor Belfort versus Luke Rockhold. And I have seen Belfort in recent fights. He looks pretty good. He's on the testosterone replacement therapy, which is, you know, the latest controversy in MMA, of course. Fighting a guy from Strikeforce who's only got one loss, and Luke Rockhold, he's 10-1. Belfort is 22-10. It's going to be a pretty interesting fight.
Yeah, my take on that is I think that on paper, Luke stacks up quite well, and yet my intuition is holding back on going all in. In that one, it's just something. And I don't know if it's a combination of these Strikeforce guys having so many problems when they get over to the UFC. I don't know, or maybe Vitor that's still resonating in my mind in his over his last fight. So this is really a tough one.
Yeah, you have to look at the caliber of fighters that they face, I think, sometimes. And Rockhold does have you know, a lot of good experience, but it's all in Strikeforce where they're really big teams at that weight class. So we'll have to see, but I definitely like Belfort in this one. But you know, Luke is not somebody you count out either, so it's a tough one. But I don't know. I think the experience factor favors Belfort this time around.
That's what I'm feeling, because, you know, if you look at the youth against the experience, you know, a lot of times you want to go with the young lion, and Luke has some devastating kicks, and Vitor has been vulnerable to that in the past, even though he's getting better at doing it himself. But he has had a problem handling kicks. So like I say, on paper, Luke really stacks up good, but I just can't get behind him. So see what happens.
Then we have Ronaldo Souza, who is 17-3, fighting Chris Cruz, 19-5. I don't know much about Souza, but I do know Camozzi from the Ultimate Fighter shows, and he's a pretty tough kid. Doesn't look like he's all that threatening for his build, but he can fight. Good fighter, sure.
Yeah, I think the key will be with Souza is his jiu-jitsu is world class, and he's really been expanding and evolving the rest of his game. So I'll be anxious to see how that plays out in the stand-up. I think that'll be the key to the fight.
We have Rafael Dos Anjos, 18-6, fighting Evan Dunham, 14-3, and Dunham's been through some wars in his latest fights. So I wouldn't expect anything less here, fighting a guy who's definitely a big name in the sport. And they're both trying to stay legit here. And it's a pretty big matchup for being in that card right there. Two tough guys going at each other there. Then we have Fabio Maldonado versus Roger Hollick. Maldonado's 18-6. And Holland is 13-4. That's going to be on the preliminaries. The next fight on the main card is Rafael Natal. Rafael. Natal is 15-4-1. He's fighting João Zeferino, 13-4. Should be a good matchup there. Got McCarney back in action. Nick Lentz. Also fighting on this card, and his record, if I can find it here, is 23-5-2, and he's fighting a guy I've never heard of, but he has a record of 21-1-1, and that is Hakran Dias, D-I-A-S, never heard of him. He's wearing some kind of fuppy hat in the picture. I don't know if that's a religious thing or what. But, that should be an interesting fight there. Yeah, guys over 20 wins fighting each other. Less than 6 losses. Well, 6 total losses among them. And we have another guy from the Ultimate Fighter shows, Mike Rio. He's only got 1 loss on his record. 9-1. Fighting Francisco Trinaldo, who's 12-2. That'll be a good matchup there. We got Gleason Tebow, 26-9, fighting John Cholish, who's 8-2. Paulo Thiago is back. He's 14-5. He's fighting Mikel Richard Dos Cruzeres, who's 16-0. I've never heard of that, but 16-0 is a pretty good record. Just very good record. Then we have Yuri Alcantara. He's 27-4, fighting Iliarde Santos, who's 27-6-1. So, guys are going for 30 fights in that. Awesome. Pretty interesting. Little match there. And then we have, you mentioned already, Maldonado versus Hollett. And 3 more here. We got John Lineker, 20-6, fighting Azamat Gashimov, 7-2. And we have Jussier Da Silva, 14-2, fighting Chris Carriasso, 14-4. The first on the preliminaries is Lucas Martins, 12-1, fighting Jeremy Larson, 8-3. And this is going to be from Brazil. I imagine that's going to mean it's going to happen at a different time than I'm used to. It always throws me off when they go overseas somewhere. So, foreign country. That's on FX. Not on Fuel, so I can watch this one on actual TV. Really. Anyway, that's the main stories I have lined up for this episode. You guys got any other little tidbits to add?
How about Nate Diaz's tweet? Did you catch the story on that?
Nate Diaz's tweet. Which one?
Yeah,
is this
the, well, this is the whole marijuana controversy where Patrick Healy was tested positive for marijuana, and he's going to lose his bonus, which was,
right.
I believe, over six figures. I think $130,000, if I'm right. So that was an expensive night out on the town for him. Whew. But anyways, apparently they took his...
Given his opponent. Not only just losing it, they're giving it to his opponent.
Yes. And apparently
Diaz
sent out a tweet that something about the guy was a fag that took the money or something. Well, I guess Dana White took that very, very personal. So he said Diaz is either going to be fined heavily or he may be cut from the UFC.
Yeah, well, I don't think the kid wants to fight again, personally. I am the only guy who said he wanted to fight was Anderson Silva, pretty much, so.
Well, and I'm talking about Nate, not Nick. I'm talking about Nate.
Oh, Nate Diaz said that. Okay, So he's still with that. He said that. That's not good for him.
Yeah. I mean, considering the fact that his last couple performances had really not been, shall we say, stellar, and then this has to come along, so I don't know if we've seen the last of him or not. But this marijuana thing is right up there with the testosterone replacement, so it's...
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to have some issues here with the different treatments that these guys are getting for, getting popped for either or.
Yeah.
Some of these guys are getting a real slap on the wrist for abusing the TRT process, but you know, once you smoke a green leaf, then you're strung up.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's one is worse than the other. I would think that TRT would be worse for your system, you know, abusing that. But it all depends on, I guess, how much you use the natural stuff. But these guys, they're not getting busted for even having THC in their system, most of these guys. They're getting busted for metabolites, which is like, in most cases, it sounds like these guys quit long before that they were tested. You know, they stopped doing it. They got popped, but testosterone is a completely different story. You can come in, you know, four times the natural limit or something like that. So... amateur system by basically ramping it all up in the early stages because they don't do the random testing during training right now unless you've already been suspended, like what's his name there, Overeem. So I don't know which is worse, but you know, if one's approved, then the other one should be at this stage, at least for people who have, you know, their medical marijuana cards, whatever that's worth. I know every state's different, but you should at least have, you know, some kind of prescription if you're going to do it. If they're giving them for testosterone replacement, you can have a documented condition where you need it. I don't see what the problem is. You can't be using words like that and trying to further the cause either.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
He is not too smart for getting out there and staring that cauldron at them. And the other thing is, you know, they're trying to really look respectable. They're trying to do what the NFL does. You know, and Dana White has said before he wants the UFC to be on par with the NFL as far as their respect across the sport. And, you know, a code of conduct is part of that. You have to be professional about it. They're taking a lot of hits from these little culinary union commercials and little websites here and there that are criticizing the UFC for their treatment towards different situations and the way their athletes are not necessarily role model for young kids growing up. You know, it's not role model material, so hopefully they send enough of these messages for the right reasons and people start to see that, you know, maybe they ought to operate with a little more class.
Yeah.
But if Nate gets thrown out of the UFC, you know, he can go fight for his brother's promotion.
Yeah, that is very good point. Very good point.
Crazy stuff, though. I'm definitely going to have to read into that, the article about the contracts, though. It seems to me like it's really overcomplicated the way they set it up. And they're basically making all kinds of excuses in this article about, you know, how they have to bear the burden of the costs for these promotions because it's not like other sports where they get a fee for, you know, televised promotional rights and all kinds of stuff. This, they do most of the stuff themselves. Well, typically that means they reap the rewards themselves, too. But I don't know. They're saying that, you know, they need all this protection written into a fighter's contract so they don't get, you know, caught holding the bag on all these costs. But I think there's a reason they keep their finances secret because they're making money hand over fist. And, you know, this reports that guys like George St. Pierre are making like $4 million a fight. There's nothing saying whether that's UFC salary or it's other stuff mixed in, what's going on there, but you don't hear about many $1 million contracts, $1 million per fight contracts in the UFC. I think we should see more of that, but I don't know. It is what it is. I think this little Bellator story I talked about earlier is a good all these leagues need to step up their money, especially a league like that that's owned by Viacom. We should be throwing around a little bit more money than that. But anyway, that's all I got. I'm stepping off the soapbox for the week.
Pretty much all I got, too. You know, it was a good show. It was great to talk to Glenn. Total class act. Great guy. And if you guys are happy, you know, for everything good that he's had throughout his entire career, hey, watch the fight this weekend. It could be some good. Oh, I'm sorry, Tom, I stole your line. But it could be some good ones on this weekend. And a nice, good card. You know, for some fight fans to really sit back and enjoy.
All right, and we will definitely keep an eye out for Glenn. I don't know whether we'll see it first on a fight on TV or on a TV show or a movie. What's going on? Glenn is going to be out there doing his thing, and we definitely enjoyed talking to him. And we'll get in touch. We'll follow him and see where life takes him. I definitely thought that was one of our better interviews over the years.
Absolutely. It was a great interview.
Yeah, it seemed to be a long time, and it flowed smooth. And I think he really he enjoyed it, too. So, win.
I always would see on TV, and I'd see him in the post-fight interview, and I'd say, I really want to interview that guy. But I actually tried contacting him through multiple sources. I know I said this last week, but now I know eventually I'd get him, and I did. So, looking forward to more like that. Next week, we're actually be having John Amadeo on, and we also have a guy, Nick Sampson, is going to be talking about Liquilite and a lot of the campaign there with they're doing with some boxers like Derek Chop Corley. So we're going to talk to both of those guys. We got two guests. John Amadeo is a boxing writer, so more boxing, Tony.
All right.
That's about it. Until next week, folks. Thanks for stopping by.
All right.
Okay, guys, lots of fights this weekend. Let's enjoy them.
All right.
Adios, amigos. On to the border.